Welcome everybody to the latest edition of the Polish Guy Podcast.
It's the Polish Guy.
We have a mono American of the week.
Holy crap, that defense is good.
Let's get on to the lighter side of things.
Holy crap, that defense is good.
They are who we thought they were.
They'll find a way to win a couple of games that maybe they should.
All things sports.
And everything in between.
Polish Guy Podcast. It's podcast time, and flying solo this week. You know, I can hear it when you guys are shutting this off right away when I'm just by myself. It's kind of insulting. Gotta be honest. Got a short jaunt here into all the playoff action going on, and the sort of special report part of the podcast is yet another fun way to blow the lid off of the college football playoff, non-playoff system, and to prove something that no one else really wants to talk about. And speaking of things, and then of course we have a Model American of the Week. At this point, like, I gotta admit, it's a little dated, but I want to get my thoughts out there, and we'll get to that. But for the first time ever, starting for, for the 2 minutes that I talk about it, for the first time ever in the Polish Guy Podcast, I believe, yes, we're going to talk about the NHL playoffs to start, and I can hear it when you skip things as well. Trust me, it's only 2 minutes. I'm going to give it for, I'm going to give a reason for you to actually root for a Boston sports team. So yes, I know it's a little weird, and but I'm going to tell you something. Some sort of interesting things. You know, I'm not sure if I ever talked about it on here before, but I used to play hockey. I have not been on the ice in about 5 years. I played the equivalent of beer league hockey, but it was a blast. For beer league hockey, I was a slightly above average goalie. And had a good glove side with my baseball background and all that stuff. And I really do miss the sport. I just have not had an opportunity to get to open skate that's within an hour of where I live. And, you know, I've done other things with my life. But as far as hockey itself, just a great game. And the things you hear about the personalities of hockey players being different than other sports, well, it's true. There's a special bond between hockey teams that doesn't seem to have with other teams, other types of sports teams that I've been on. Baseball came the closest to a hockey team. But, you know, I don't talk about hockey on here, well, because one, most Americans don't care. And two, it's just been such a... It's actually been a sport mismanaged worse than baseball, and that's just really hard to do. And you almost have to believe Bill Simmons when he talks about Gary Bettman being a mole that David Stern put in there just to ruin hockey so basketball could overtake hockey. Because in the 70s and early 80s with Gretzky and everything, it was no contest, no contest whatsoever. Then Bird and Magic and Jordan was the heyday of basketball, and here we are now. Hockey took, I don't know what, 6 years, 5 years to get a decent TV contract after being relegated to Versus for so long. It's like playing in the Coca-Cola League and not being able to make it to the English Premier League. But you know, hockey itself, great sport. The way it's managed... terrible sport. And I'm going to tell you that with the teams remaining, you've got the Sharks, who's going to finish off the Red Wings. You've got another meaningless series out west. And then you've got Tampa Bay already dispatching Washington. And then you've got Boston. And Boston, they exercised their demons. They swept the Flyers after losing four in a row to the Flyers after being up 3-0 last year. And I remember actually being at a dart banquet. Yes, I play darts. It's fantastic as well. It's like beer league softball, except you don't have to run or swing a bat. So that's what's really great about darts. But back to hockey. You know, I was actually a little mad that the Flyers came back. I've been an Islanders fan, and the Flyers, they just, I've never liked them. But this year, I'm telling you, if you have any interest at all in hockey, root for Boston. The reason is they're a bunch of no-names. They've got an old, bald goalie in Tim Thomas. They've basically got Yul Brynner in net. He's all gangly, and he looks weird when he's making saves, but, you know, he's like a little Hossack-esque in how he does it. And they don't have any of the big stars. And they've exercised their demons, and they're the only team left with any sort of good relevance, and it'd be nice to have another old-time team win the cup. And my biggest problem with hockey is that it's a Canadian sport, but yet so many of the teams are in America and no one cares. And that's why you can't root for Tampa Bay. Florida hockey, really? You serious? I bet there's less people there than there are at Tampa Bay Rays games. Ridiculous. Yeah. Tampa Bay emails are probably telling me that they sold out last week. Whoop-de-doo. You guys shouldn't have a team. I'm sorry. Florida should not have hockey teams. Hockey teams should be all up in the upper Midwest, the East, and maybe Upper West. And even that's iffy. That's where they all should be, and there should be at least half the league in Canada. That's it. Of course, Canada might not have enough big towns to support teams, so just whatever the maximum is, put them all there. Forget about all these California and Florida teams and all that junk. It's not worth it. You're losing people. You're not gaining people. It's not working. And if that isn't a good enough argument to root for Boston, then at least pay homage to Cam Neely, Seabass from Dumb and Dumber by doing it. Okay? All right, do that for me. NBA playoffs. Boy, we had a little bit of a surprise going on here. A lot of people, beginning of the season, might be Boston and Lakers again. Well, then Boston decided that you shouldn't tip. And Boston's starting to figure out now that you shouldn't get old, injured guys in the middle of your front line and then trade away the last of your toughness right before the trade deadline for a young player who looks like he's going to pee himself like a excited puppy every time he gets on the court. So Boston has run into trouble, and they've run into what has basically become the league's nemesis. And quite frankly, I'm now a Heat fan because everyone hates them. And it's sort of hipster of me to do so, but it's nice to have a villain and root for the villain sometimes. I mean, when you were a kid, I mean, just a little part of you were always rooting for Darth Vader, right? And then you didn't know how you wanted to feel about him being partially good or maybe used to be good and maybe had good in him. You liked every part of that story. But the Heat, they're just jerks, and you're not supposed to be able to just join your friends in South Beach and have an NBA championship team by getting three friends together. Well, it might only be two friends that you need because Chris Bosh is non-existent every other night, and the thing is they can't hit any shots at the end of the game. They have no plays at the end of the game. They have no idea what to do other than an ISO play, which is most ridiculous because that makes the NBA no better than college basketball at the end of games, which is really, really sad when you think about it. But you know, it's nice to have the villain. And another villain, Kobe Bryant, who is a polarizing figure. I personally don't like him, never have. I've personally enjoyed all the hotel room jokes and $4 million jokes and multiple dollar apologies things that have come from Kobe Bryant. And I do think that a lot of times he takes shots that are a detriment to his team. But now they are down 3-0 to the Mavs. And the thing about that series is Dallas is still nervous. The entire city of Dallas still completely nervous about the whole thing. Why? Because, they're still not over the 06 finals. If you talk to someone in Dallas, I have a buddy in Houston, if you talk to someone in Dallas about that team, they seem to talk about it like the worst breakup they ever had. You know, it's something you might not think about, it's been 5 years in this case, but in the breakup case, you know, maybe it's been 5 years since you thought of it, but all of a sudden a friend brings it up at a party or something and makes a joke or, oh, he dated that crazy blah, 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 or something like that, and then just inside, you remember what actually happened, because none of your friends ever find out 100% of what happened in all your relationships, most of the and you think of those moments, and you just look, and you sit there, and you go, oh, and then you need a shot of liquor, and then you're okay again. But every single time people bring up the Dallas series against the Heat in Dallas, that is sort of the reaction of the fan there. That sort of reaction, just not a good thing. And, you know, I hope the Mavs do it. And I hope it is Mavs Heat in the finals, because you got the choke artist team, the team that is promoted through the league so much because of their owner, for one, who's a brilliant businessman and a good marketer, and speaks his mind, and in my opinion has always been refreshing. And then you've got the evil empire, the Heat, the Mojitos, or the Three Amigos, or whatever kind of crappy... Can we get them a good nickname? Can someone start emailing the podcast with some good nicknames? I still haven't heard one that's that good. They need something. I mean, other than just, hey, look at those three assholes. You know what, that's it. That's their nickname. I am rooting for the three assholes against America's sweetheart choke artist Mavs. And I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. And, you know, I think the Thunder or Memphis, whoever wins that series, doesn't really matter. I don't think I don't think you can expect Zach Randolph to be that good throughout an entire playoffs. It just doesn't make sense unless he's taken, like, anti-crazy pills. Or anti, you know, there's a lot of rumors about Zach Randolph and what he does, but it's nice to see him actually do well for once and try so hard and lead a team, but you really can't bet on it, and you just can't bet on it because of his past. I'm sorry, until he proves completely otherwise for a long period of time, then. You know, you can't believe in that. So, I'm hoping it's Mavs Heat. I think Mavs would be America's darlings in that one. And you know what? When it doesn't involve teams that I really particularly care about or really particularly like, I mean, because I'm just liking the Heat just to be a hipster. I mean, let's be honest. But, you know, I like chaos and disorder when it doesn't involve my team. And I think if a team gets together and just gets a couple of friends together and they win an NBA championship and they prove all these other theories wrong, I mean, because the parts of that team don't make sense. It's just a mishmash. Sepulstra's, I'm not even sure. I think he might just have his rotate 12 guys. And other than the big three, he just throws darts at a board. That's his rotation. And then the next three darts, those are the guys of his rotation coming in that day. You know, they talk about how great of a coach he's been, but really with the parts, you just kind of, what, you mix and match, right? I mean, there's no other way to do it. So I don't know. NBA playoffs have been pretty entertaining. On to the NFL draft. And just a quick review, you know, this has been talked about ad nauseum at several sites. What you're not going to hear from us, despite us being draft nicks here, Hack and myself, You never get to hear actual grades from us. It doesn't make sense. I mean, when we've created, when I created the draft analyzer last year, it was a measure of 3 and 5 year success. And just a note to the owners and players, could you please get your asses together so I can update the draft analyzer? It's really kind of pissing me off. It was going to add salaries. It was going to be really, really cool. And just get it done. But as far as that timeline goes, I'm still not backing off of mid-October. The next big appeals hearing is June 3rd, which is exactly, we thought it'd take 4 to 6 weeks from the May 5th, whatever, the last announcement. And, the last announcement was April 29th, but it just, you're not going to hear us talk about draft grades. It's just never going to happen. We're going to tell you we don't like picks, and we still hate the Cam Newton pick. But there are rumors coming out of Carolina saying that they are actually going to try at least parts of the college offense where they actually run the ball with Newton. And you know what? I have to say something to Carolina, and it's not just because Ron Rivera is a former Bear. But good. It's about time someone actually tried. One of the reasons that this style of quarterback hasn't made the NFL because no one has really tailored an NFL offense. The Wildcat did some, but you know, the Wildcat, it's just a version of the single wing. It's not really a quarterback intensive offense. So when you need a quarterback to run a read option offense, it's just completely different than the Wildcat. So NFL teams have never really tried this, and it's one of the reasons maybe that these types of quarterbacks have never really made it so far. And yes, I still think Cam Newton will be a bust. But you know what? It's going to be. I am a fan of trying this out. Yeah, he's probably going to get hurt. Yeah, it's probably going to hurt the longevity. Yeah, I don't know if you can play two quarterbacks. Are you going to play Clawson on some downs? After all, he was a second rounder last year. He got picked last year before you had your second pick this year, for God's sake. But you know what? Good. Good for the Panthers if they actually do it. I won't believe it till I see it, but good for them. Because you know what? The NFL is not called the No Fun League just because players get fined because their socks are the wrong color or they're pulled up the wrong way or the face mask, the mouthpiece color is wrong. Yeah, that's a new one I heard about. $5,000 for the wrong mouthpiece color. Ridiculous. It's extortion and it's stupid. But the other reason why the NFL is called the No Fun League is because the coaches are never allowed to have fun. And you know what? We're guilty of this too. I try to remain objective here. It is hard. It's not easy. It's easy to be on both sides of an argument, and it's easy to have success when a gamble works. But when a gamble fails, we are way too quick to jump on the facts of what eventually happened, even if the numbers say that the move was right. And that the biggest one of these is from Bill Belichick when he failed on the 4th-and-2 in Indianapolis a couple of years ago, and the numbers actually said that, you know what, Peyton Manning probably would have scored from where he was going to get the ball anyway, so the only way to win the game was to get that first down. And even Bill Belichick, a guy who's as respected as he is, he had to get to that level of coaching, 3 rings, and he still heard it from everybody, and he made the right percentage play. Look it up. You can look it in the book Scorecasting. There's a chapter on it there. You can look it up online. I believe even Football Outsiders did an article on it. I don't know, someone from ESPN did. If it wasn't Football Outsiders, the percentages were right. And because we do this and because we jump on it, the coaches never have any fun. The coaches don't get to have inventive offenses. They don't get to go for it on fourth down, even though the percentages say you should do any time when it's less than 4th-and-5 and you're in the opponent's territory. That's ridiculous. The average yards per play is about 5 yards per play. If you're at fourth and two, the mistakes that people do is that they pass too often on fourth and one and fourth and two. Runs are much more successful, over 70% of the time. Not many passes around the league are completing 70% of all their passes. So you're using a lower percentage play if you're passing the ball. Just pound it up the gut. Make a couple of key blocks. Do something. Have some fun. Go for it on fourth down. Ignore punts every now and then. Do something fun. Run more flea flickers. Who cares? It's football. It's supposed to be inventive. But yet the coaches in the league are mostly forced to be the least inventive as possible. And the problem is that it all this stuff comes back around review time, and coaches are skittish of being bold and aggressive and different. So that is why I'm rooting for Carolina to actually do this. Maybe it'll fail. Maybe it'll probably fail. But we haven't seen anyone really try yet. So if they run, like, say, half their offense in a read option or something like that, that's something. That's at least trying. They know that this guy who comes in, maybe he just has numbered plays for his read option plays because, you know what, he hasn't learned NFL playbook language yet. Oh my goodness, when I heard that was the funniest thing I heard in a while. But you know what? Good for you, Carolina. Go for it. And in finality, not just talking about Newton, but in the whole finality, the podcast actually, we did a lot better than we thought we would. We actually had a third day correct pick with Chimney Checkle out of the Raiders. And you can guarantee that we're going to pick the fastest guy off the board of them again next year. But when we looked back last year, which was the Make Sense draft, we had 11 players picked exactly right. And this is just the first round. 11 players picked exactly right. And we had four other positions picked correctly. This year we only had 6 exact picks, and the biggest thing was doing a mock draft before the final rumors came in. It became clear that Von Miller and Marcell Dareus were going to flip-flop. So that hurt us, but, you know, it is what it is. So we had 6 exactly correct, and we had 8 positions right, so it was only one slot worse, really, than last year. We actually got 26 out of the 32 first-rounders right this year. Last year was only 24. Last year I didn't keep any stats in the second round, but for what it's worth, we went 18 for 32 in the second round, so 44 out of 64 in the first two rounds. And we even had a couple exacts in the second round as well this year. So reasonably happy with how we did. And you know what? Let's just hope there's football now, and I hope it happens before mid-October, but they're not talking now. The next appeals hearing is June 3rd, so I am I'm not optimistic at this point. We're not going to miss the season, folks, and they're not going to be that dumb. This is not this is not Gary Bettman. This is somebody else who's done pretty darn well for himself. And before we get to the main topic here, just want to do a quick baseball review. You know, a lot of people were ragging on the podcast picks. A couple of weeks into the season, the Rays were 1-8, the Red Sox were 3-9, those sorts of things. And I told everybody, relax, talk to me in July. It's baseball. All of a sudden, the Rays are in second place. The Sox have battled back to where they're around 500. They're not too far back. The Yankees still have all their questions, and Derek Jeter is looking very, very, very old at this point. And, you know, there's a lot of teams out there where it looks like the Rockies are already up 4 or 5 games, so they're looking like the strong team we expected them to be. And the Brewers just got Zach Greinke back, so we'll see how that affects the rotation. Probably give him a couple of starts. He did not look very sharp in his first start back. Probably take him a couple of starts to get back. looks like we're going to miss. The Braves obviously can still make a run, but wow, those Marlins. You know, I did fight with picking the Marlins for a while over the Braves. It's just going to be a nice race. I mean, the Phillies are eventually going to take that division. That was pretty easy. And the A's, unfortunately, looks like the other bad pick. They just can't score enough runs in offense. I forgot about that rule that you can have great pitching, but if you don't ever score any runs, you know, you're still not going to do very well. And finally, the biggest surprise team is right here in the Cleveland area, the Cleveland Indians. Yeah, they have a baseball team. They have uniforms and everything. It is really great. And they have some staying power. And the reason they have staying power is uniquely progressive field. I hate calling it that. It's going to be the Jake in my mind forever. But they're really good at home. And they have just enough power to hit a lot of homers at home. And they have just enough pitching to keep the other team at bay. They're going to be a really good home team and a really average to below average away team. And we're already seeing that. I mean, they lost to the Mariners, who can't score runs either. But the Indians have some staying power. They're very young in the pitching staff, and it seems to be getting better and better. Couple of guys aren't hitting the way they're expected to be, and Grady Sizemore looks just like he's angry at the baseball, and he's really pissed off that he missed last year, and that's a really good sign. The other reason they have staying power is the rest of the division stinks. The Royals are very young and talented, but they're not going to blow away anybody. The White Sox have been awful. Oh, I forgot. Maybe that was the worst pick. Jeez, can they not hit? Holy crap. And, you know, I'm a little concerned with Adam Dunn because he's used to being in the field, and he's admitted that it's hard for him to get used to playing DH. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there, but there's no one good in that division, and when you're off to a 21-9 start, you just got to go 500 the rest of the way. I mean, that's really all you got to do in a division like that. That'll leave you with a pretty good record. You'll finish 87 and 75, and that might be enough. It might be in that division. So, we'll see what happens with that, but interesting stuff in baseball. Now for the real fun. The real fun of this podcast, I enjoyed finding this out just immensely. And I thought of this subject simply because... don't know if everyone heard it. It kind of got buried with other stuff going on this week. But the CEO of the Fiesta Bowl or CFO or a high-up guy, I forgot exactly what it is, basically using bowl funds for his own personal gain. Shocking that someone in power was abusing their power. I can't believe it. It never happens that way. Oh, my God. Oh, if I had a nickel for all the stories I've heard about someone in power abusing their power or trying to make themselves get richer, I'd probably have 10 cents only. I mean, he's what? Who's the other guy we've ever heard of do that? I can't remember his name. It's been so long. But this guy, he comes out, and the rest of the board for the Fiesta Bowl basically begged the NCAA and the BCS to remain in the BCS, and they sounded like a boyfriend who just cheated on their girlfriend for like the 43rd time. Oh, no, we've really changed this time. We promise it won't happen again. I don't know what happened. It was a mistake. She doesn't mean anything to me. The million we spent on the jet for our own personal use, just that didn't mean anything to us. I just can't believe you. I will prove to you that you can trust me in the future. I swear. Let me just put it this way. This is so laughable, and it feeds into how corrupt the entire system is and how broken it is. Look, and I've joked before, and we've talked about you know, paying players and how it only work at the big schools, and that's not a true solution. But maybe there's small solutions like letting them have freaking jobs, you know, so you don't run into other problems. All the problems that I'm going to get to here all circulate around one or two major points, and that is it. There are no other major points other than the couple that we find that are just linear throughout all the problems that the NCAA has had in the last 30 years. And it starts at the top when you have guys like the chairman of the board or CFO or CEO of the Fiesta Bowl, by the way, a rich guy, just abusing the funds available to him like that, you know, buying a $16,000 shower curtain. I don't know if that actually happened, but this is the type of excess that we're talking about. It's a joke. I hope the BCS, in this case, is not the jilted lover who's going to give them another chance. I hope they get kicked to the curb. I hope the BCS has some self-respect. And not all girls in that situation are lack complete self-respect, but in this case, you know, maybe the other bulls who are the BCS's friend should urge them very decisively to kick the Fiesta Bowl to the curb. Maybe that. A good support group would help here, too. And so either the BCS needs the good support group or just have enough self-esteem and self-respect to do it on their own, okay? So that's what you should do. So just for fun, just because I love just blowing holes into the whole NCAA system, just for fun, since we're talking about Ohio State, my alma mater, and I've said this before, it's very simple, I'm fine with anything that happens. I wanted to find out, if is it true, does this really happen everywhere? My research says there's a good chance that it happens everywhere. But as far as Tressel getting fired, I'm fine with that. It is a fireable offense. Will I be surprised if he resigns? Well, he will never get fired. He would choose to resign, but we all would know what it means. I'd also be fine with him keeping his job. You know, there's a theory behind the scenes that people talk about that if you're not on the police blotter, or if you're not being investigated by the NCAA, then you're not a good NCAA football team. So I want to put this to test. I went back in the last 30 years, and I wrote down all the 30 national championship teams. Then I did some research on sanctions in the NCAA for each of those schools and when those sanctions occurred. One thing is we can be sure about is that sanctions usually happen at least one and sometimes up to 4 to 5 years later after a successful season. In this case, it was just one for Ohio State. At USC, it took 4 or 5 years for them to figure out everything. Well, it was actually there. They just had to go through the process. So I went back 30 years, and I said, well, let's find out how many of our national championships have some sort of taint on them. I'm sure you'll be shocked to find out that, and really we can exclude the four of the last five that are clean so far, because we're not completely sure yet, but about half, 14 or 15 here, are tainted. Now, the heyday of tainted championships, I admit, was definitely the 1980s, but it is still going on now, and we have a clear evidence of the few people that have gotten off scot-free. There's only two major coaches that account for five of the last 30 championships. Those two coaches remain untainted with NCAA sanctions, but they are severely tainted themselves with arrests during their tenure, really at the end of their tenure. So let's get to it. This is fun, isn't it? Let's start with 1980. Georgia. Now, it didn't come out until a 1986 report, but in this case, it was mostly academic abuse that was found with the Georgia football team. Also, payments to players, you know, the pay-for-play stuff that we're hearing from Auburn, current Auburn players. We'll get to that. There's a string of that. But anyway, 1984, Georgia, still academic abuse. We can put some taint on it. The academic stuff is usually the stuff that takes the longest to find a to have any sort of solid sanctions for. So yes, 1980 Georgia tainted academic abuse. Recently, they self-reported that they sent former players to the press conference of the signing of a recruit. That is against NCAA rules. 1981, Clemson. They were guilty too. 1982, right after. Man, they didn't waste any time. Mostly payments to players, other sorts of academic abuse found there. 1982, Penn State, clean. Clean. 1983, Miami. you know, Miami is really helping us out here. I mean, they've got 83, 87, 89, and 91, and 2001, and there is questions abound for them. They basically have a lifetime achievement award for NCAA sanctions. I mean, we go all the way back to Luther Campbell. We've got sanctions in the 1980s, 1995, 2010 violations. From 89 to 94, Pell Grant violations at Miami. And, you know, they alone are one-sixth of the taint. So, you know, they have a heavy influence here. But the numbers are still the numbers. Half of these are going to be tainted. BYU, 1984, national championships. And stop me if you heard this before. Many people dissented against their championship because they, quote, played a soft schedule. I don't know if we've heard that argument. So, yes, the argument has been around for 27 years at least. 1985, Oklahoma. They vacated 2005, 2007, they had no-show jobs, they had sanctions in 1985 and 1987, more pay-for-play stuff, reports of sums of money changing hands, boosters going down, that sort of thing. 1985, tainted. 1986, Penn State, clean. 1987, Miami, keep laughing. 1988, Notre Dame, clean. Lou Holtz. There's a little bit of lisp, but mostly clean. 1989, Miami. 1990, Colorado and Georgia Tech. As far as I could not find anything on Georgia Tech, so good for them. Colorado, though, not only had their recent allegations where good old Rick Neuheisel earned millions off of NCAA tournament pools, but 1990, if you remember, was the year that they had the famous fifth down game, which alone taints that championship. Let's see, 1991, Miami and Washington split the national championship. I'm sorry, Washington had Neuheisel. Colorado was clean, but they had the fifth down, so I'm sorry. I got that mixed up in the notes. Washington was Rick Neuheisel, and they had sanctions in 1994 and 2004, improper benefits. Neuheisel was the 2000 to 2004 stuff, 1994, infected the 91 season. 92 Alabama, pretty laughable. The fun story here is that in 1993, Antonio Langham hired an agent, but yet played for the team in 93 and 94. Sanctions came down in Alabama in 1995 and 1997. So way to go, Alabama, 1992 has taint on it. 1993, Florida State. Now, this, you can argue against me. I could see you fight this one. The reason I put taint on this, and really, How much fun is it to actually say the word taint in a podcast this many times in a row? It's just sort of amusing. But Florida State, the reason is that we had severe academic violations come down, and Wentz had to be vacated by Bobby Bowden, who'd been there since the early 80s. I'm going to think, just by chance, that Bobby Bowden didn't think in 2005 that to keep up with everybody that now would be a good time to start really abusing academics and the, you know, Tutorgate. I'm going to think that this idea to have tutors involved and help out players' grades, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that, you know what, I'm going to think that after 22 years on the job and the success, I doubt that he came up with that idea just then to try to keep up. I'm going to say that there's probably more in the past. Just going to throw that guess out there. So try to argue with me, I'm sure, but come on. You don't come up with these ideas, especially in the right after the 80s, and the 80s are just the heyday of this whole thing. Then we come to a pretty clean period. 94 Nebraska, 95 Nebraska, 96 Florida. Amazing that they got away. You know, Florida, for as much as I dislike them, they're coming off nice and clean here so far, and it's hard to believe. You got to think that there's something there, but you have to give credit. Nothing so far. 1997, Michigan and Nebraska. You can't fault Michigan for the recent stuff. You got to think that's pretty clean. 98, Tennessee. Peyton Manning would have had someone, well, that wasn't Peyton Manning, but that was before. But that was after, that was T. Martin, wasn't it? Anyway, 99 FSU, that was the famous Pierre Warwick year. And while that, you know, I'm giving them the taint by association here a little bit, but Peter Warwick, if you remember, he took a very, very big discount on shoes. You know, basically stole them. And, you know, it hurt. It basically cost him the Heisman Trophy that year. Oklahoma in 2000. Well, we've already gone through a little bit of that. Rhett Bomar and friends. Let's see. Miami 2001. There's some taint on that. And you know what? Gotta admit, there's taint on OSU's 2002. There is. Can't think that Trestle is all of a sudden doing this, and he has some history at Youngstown State. And you know what? When it comes to sanctions, when it comes to scandal in sports, you almost have to believe the crazy guy. And Maurice Clarett had some very unkind things to say about Jim Trestle when he left. Now you gotta wonder exactly how much of that might be true. And it sucks to hear that, say that about my alma mater, but, you know, I have to be honest when it's there. So there's taint on that. 2003, USC, LSU, USC, obviously tainted, 04, USC, tainted, 05, Texas. Obviously we can't taint somebody just because of, you know, head case quarterback. 06 Florida, 07 LSU, Weasel coach, but they got it. Weasel coach out of there. Florida, Bama, which, and then the recent ones, Florida, Bama, Auburn, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and throw Auburn on there as a tainted championship. Now, here's the thing. Auburn goes back to 1991. They had a bonus system back then, which sounds familiar, and that goes all the way back to Pat Dye in 1991. So, you know, pretty much what they're being accused of right now sounds like it might have just been going on for, I don't know, forever. So, when it comes down to it, we've got, let's see, 4, 7, 9, 11, 16 tainted championships out of 33, which counts the split champions. And you know what? The most recent four up in the air, but you know, let's give LSU and Florida the benefit of the doubt. It's amazing that they have no taint on them, but so far they don't. So give them credit where credit's due. But 16 out of 33. You don't think the system's broken. You don't think maybe a playoff just might help that maybe a team wouldn't have to be one or two. And they wouldn't have to do these things. Maybe being the top 16 was an achievable goal without improper benefits. Maybe relaxing how players are paid in the off can get paid in the off season might be a good idea. Real jobs, I don't know, real responsibility might help round out your football players. But guess what, NCAA? It starts at the top, and half of your previous 30 years of champions are tainted in some way. And accounting for five of the non-tainted is Joe Paterno and Tom Osborne. I'm not going to sit here and say that I believe that they're totally clean. Obviously, they had plenty of arrests during their tenures, especially more now that when the reins are off more, there's more arrests that we hear about. Of course, it's part of the culture now. You wouldn't hear about it back then. You hear about it more now. But let's not say that these guys are clean. It also would hurt NCAA and its history if it was found out these guys weren't clean. So is it possible that something was swept under the rug in the past? I think so. Especially when half of your champions are proven to be shady in some way. And it all revolves around money. It's two things, academics or money. Well, academics are hurt because players are expected to focus too much on football. They can't go to classes during the day because of non-mandatory workouts, non-mandatory pre-practice stuff, and then they have practice, then they have the games, then they travel. I was a manager of a dorm at Ohio State that housed the football players. I saw what these guys' lives are like. It is football. They are paid athletes through scholarships that represent the university, but yet they can't legally get paid in any other way that is any other achievement except on the field. So you wonder why boosters are giving them wads of cash. Well, it's because those no-show jobs that Oklahoma was guilty of, they're not even allowed to show up at those jobs. You have a problem. A playoff system might help. A relaxing of how they get paid, how much or how they're allowed to be paid might help. And relaxing of bullshit rules probably be a good thing. But you know what? You need to start at the top. You need to be honest with yourselves. And we know that's not going to happen. So you're welcome, NCAA. You know what? I don't think I'm ever going to have a job with them. Going to go out on a limb. Finally, it's the Model American of the Week. And this one is obvious. But it was chosen specifically because although we disagree, many of us disagree with Rashard Mendenhall. He is a true Model American of the Week because he was allowed to say what he said because he's an American. Now, there's a little bit difference about how people want to attribute free speech. Personally, you know what? I don't care that he has a dissenting opinion. It does make me like him less. I was personally affected by 2001. And I wish, give us a day to celebrate. Now, I'm not a dancing in the streets guy. I have a problem with that. I had an acquaintance that was, quote, mayor of Fallujah during the worst parts of the war. And the reason I would never dance in the street for any terrorist that we kill is simply because I've heard the horror stories of what happens to our soldiers when we are not able to recover the body. It's not good. Let's just say that they are dancing in the streets, but the body is hanging from somewhere, or what's left of it. So that's why I would never be that. I feel like I would be on the terrorist level if I was actually dancing in the streets. But I'm a happy guy. I'm happy that he's gone. It's not an end-all, be-all of anything. But it provides some closure to some people that were really affected at that time, much, much worse than me. The people that died with me were acquaintances. That's it. The people that I knew was a kid I went to school and a firefighter's name I knew of. and that's it, you know, and it can provide closure for other people. But with what Rashard Mendenhall did, I wish he'd waited just a day. Let us celebrate a day. And the way he should have done it is in the nicely, in a well-worded letter, like his apology was. Twitter is not a place to have witty banter and a long discussion. Twitter is a place to have quick quips, quick opinions, make people laugh, promote podcasts. Thank you, Reader M. And, you know, that's a great thing about our country. There's a lot to say that, but what you have to what he has to understand is that what parts of what he said was misguided. What we have to understand, which parts of what he said really should be discussed. And, you know, conspiracy theories abound, whatever. My belief is that maybe we didn't get him last weekend. But if we didn't, he's already been dead. So the finality, just having a way to give the finality, I'm fine with. So I don't care if there's some stupid cover-up. I think Bin Laden's probably, you know, maybe we didn't get him. Maybe that's why the body was put at sea. But you know what? He is dead. And the event and the speech, it gave closure. So give credit where credit's due. But where people were mistaken with what happened with Rashard Mendenhall is that some other people said, well, you can't persecute him for it or anything like that. Well, actually, yes, we can. He lost his sponsorship deal because they didn't like what he said. He's allowed to say whatever he wants, which makes us this unique country in that. Other countries, he really would be in jail right now in some countries. That's something he needs to understand. And the reason why we're not one of those countries is that because we liberated ourselves, and the same type of people that he may have been offending at that time are the people who gave him the right to say what he did. That's it. That's it, Rashard. Look, you're fine. I'm going to enjoy watching you on Sundays. I'm going to be rooting against you because I didn't particularly like what you said. That's it. My opinion's changed. I don't think you're a terrible human being. If I met Rashard Mendenhall on the street, it's not the first thing I would ask him about. I would take it as his opinion. I'd be cordial. That's it. He's a person that, with that sort of opinion, I probably would, you know, with that misguided opinion, he's probably I'd try to have a discussion with, and that's it. So, you know what, that Rashard Mendenhall, you are the model American of the week. For good and for bad. And for the first time, I think we can actually say it's a truly American model American. See you on the next Polish Guy podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of the weekend or whenever you're listening to this. Polish Guy podcast. Out. America, America. Love is the only way that there is no getting me through. Now it comes up, it's just you. Girl, oh yeah, lick my butt, don't want my mouth. Girl, oh yeah, what you gonna do when we come for you? It's a dream to be your chair. It's a whole world of love. Oh yeah. Lock yeah.